Welcome to New Persuasive Words, a podcast of hope seeking understanding. Join Scott Jones and Bill Bohr for an ongoing conversation about theology, culture, and politics. Funny, contentious, outrageous, there's something for everyone. And now, your hosts.
Welcome back to New Persuasive Words. I am, as always and ever, Scott Jones.
And I'm Bill Bohr.
Bill, this would be maybe the top 10 episodes of things you don't care about. But
right, yeah. And I think we should say that we purposely are not talking about Israel, Gaza right now. Part of it's just because we just feel everything's too soon. I've certainly made the statements I need to make here in my community. Again, it's a shame that thoughts and prayers have been lost as a meaningful phrase, but I actually believe that thoughts and prayers are better than sometimes than words and weapons. So, at any rate, but I thought I needed to at least say that because we've not done anything, we've not podcast since this horrific thing has happened. So we will have things to say about this in the future, but sometimes the best thing to do in view of the tragedies of life and the problem of evil is to talk about something totally different.
This could be a hashtag, thoughts and prayers better than words and weapons.
Yeah.
You heard it here first, and you might hear it on crackers and grape juice. I'm saying these are our brothers, and you know they share.
Or maybe that's what Jim Jordan's talking about tonight at the death of his candidacy. Our thoughts and prayers go out to the almost Neanderthal Speaker of the House.
And we had the whole Neanderthal news thing today.
I know. I saw that. And I also, can I just say to all our Neanderthal listeners, I apologize. That was a low blow.
I think some of our best... I love the Neanderthals, the poorly educated, the diplomat. Some of our best listeners are Neanderthals. Like, I see the people. They have, like, the headphones out of rocks and, like with tree branches, I guess. And they're great listeners, and they love the show.
Although I think Jim Jordan should spend some time with Neanderthals because at least they cooperated with each other and took care of their own children.
Tell us what you really think.
I think Neanderthals are really good at protecting children from predators.
So, all right, before we get into the topic you don't care about, let me ask you this. If you're Jim Jordan and you're playing poker, like, what hand are you playing? I mean, what is your pocket? Because you're a guy that seems to have a degree of inevitability in that you can get the most votes, but you can't get all the votes. And so how do you play this hand? I mean, what do you do? Because he has, in the poker analogy, he has a decent hand, I would guess, right? And then not bad chips.
Well, then you take a baseball bat, like Joe Pesci, Goodfellas, and you just try to beat the people who are voting for you into submission. And apparently, it worked for two of them, but it pissed off a couple. Pissed off more. So again, maybe he should have gone to the introductory on how to pass a bill. Remember that what we learned was that
how a bill that an ABC.
How does a bill become law? Because obviously. He doesn't know how to do that because in 16 years, he has not passed one. Well, there's not one single bit of legislation that he got passed.
And the bill said, the bill saying, I'm just a bill. It's not bill.
Yeah. So he's done so much for his people in Ohio, fair state of Ohio. So, yeah, no, I just think, I think the Constitution actually, if we actually believe the Constitution forbids him from holding this office, partially because he was part of an insurrection, but I diverge. So, day 14 without a Speaker of the House? Are we in that day 14?
And we're fine. I mean, maybe like day 14, it's going to be day 196 soon.
Yeah, you do actually. Well, we won't be fine after what is it, November 17th? that will not be fine then, right?
When things need to be certified, but
right or no? When the that's when the stopgap.
Oh, the budget measure. Yeah.
So, but I'm feeling they're dealing really well. By the way, My favorite congressman, Brian Fitzpatrick of Bucks County, who on his website says the most independently ranked member of Congress, a self-proclaimed leader of the moderate group, voted for Jordan on both ballots. So there we go. Thank you. Thank you, Brian Fitzpatrick, for making America what it is again.
Making America suck again.
Yep.
All right. So we're going to get to something that, yeah, let's just get to the
issue. Let's get to the topics, right.
Yeah. So we have so many opinions on many of these things, but we're going to talk about
something that we know neither of us knew anything about.
Why, Bill, that's never stopped us before.
Right. Yeah. Right.
And also, I did.
You did some research.
I mean, I started research at the top of the hour.
All right. So let's get right into this because America is dying to hear what this is going to be about.
So this is about the dove awards, which is it's a great bird, right? I mean,
a dove is a fine bird, a nice icon of the Holy Spirit and peace and a great central character in a wonderful Prince song.
You know, I like the condor, the extinct condors. They're unattractive.
They're not extinct anymore. I saw condors this summer and the Great Cane.
That's like my dating life. I was once endangered and maybe I'm back. I'm like that's going to be my Tinder thing. Condors fly again. So ladies, if you want to search that, condors fly again.
I'm now going to have to put soap in my mouth and ears for that. Your Tinder handle. I could have gone for the rest of my life and never heard that handle, but go ahead.
So the Dove Awards, which for people that don't know, this is the Evangelical Music Awards, and it's held in Nashville. And for people that, you know, don't listen to or connect with Christian music, that's fine. But it is a kind of, I mean, it sells a lot of albums. It's a cottage industry, more than a
condo. No, it's not a cottage industry. It's a multi-billion dollar industry.
Yeah, so it's a condo industry, developer industry. And so some people have taken to, so there's a singer, Amy Grant, who is one of the great Christian singers.
She's the first lady of contemporary Christian music. I actually remember seeing her at either Jesus 79 or Creation 1980 when I was in college. Yeah, it was not. That was not the most memorable concert I've ever been to. But yeah, she was a heartthrob. Yeah, just started out. She was kind of the Taylor Swift there. She was Taylor Swift of Christian music at one point.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. What were you doing at the concert? Were you clapping? Because there's no shrooms. There's no drinking. Were you clapping hands? Were you?
Maybe I had was there with a date for one of those, and then took youth group kids. I was doing volunteer youth work. So, or actually, I was doing youth work while I was in college. So I was actually getting paid minimum wage for it. So I was a professional.
This is a great thing for the parents back then. Hey, you put a young billboard at minimum wage in a van with your kids. This is.
I was actually in a Christian rock band too. We were supposed to. I think we got asked, we were to play at one of those things, but we couldn't get along and broke up before the festival. Nothing really, really Christian. It was in the works, so we never got there. Yeah.
You were like, when they call it Guns N' Roses, you guys could have been Guns N' Crosses, breaking up before the big opportunity.
Well, yeah. Well, I think Guns N' Roses did okay. Did all right for themselves.
Well, they could. Appetite for Destruction is absolutely one of the best rock albums of all time, I would argue. But then once Axl Rose jumped out of minivans.
He certainly he was not in the Mick Jagger longevity program.
So these awards, I mean, this is, as you said, a multi-billion dollar industry. The Dove Awards, it's the Christian
Grammys.
Yeah, this is Christian Grammys. It's,
which no one watches anyway, but go ahead. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, again, the Grammys are...
Wow, whatever. All right.
Everyone should have someone slap someone in an award ceremony.
That was the Academy Awards, I think, but anyway.
I'll tell you what would be the greatest, selling show on American television ever would be, and this might be a Trump campaign rally, if you had Victoria's Secret models throwing javelins at people coming over the border, and then Trump saying, look, I mean, these are dreamers. These are the real dreamers. And like, we have the angels and the dreamers. I mean, this is where we're at, dude.
Well, I was kind of reminded, was it American Gods where the Christians with guns actually shot the Mexican Jesus, right? No, I think, the Jesus gets crucified to do, I think, every day in this country, one way or the other. So anyway, but moving on.
So we're going to get back to the topic at hand.
Yes, please.
Which we begrudgingly did this on my insistence.
I'm begrudgingly doing it, but you convinced me. Go ahead. Keep convincing me.
So this award show, people are dressing in drag. And Derek Webb, who I've interviewed on when I used to work with Mockingbird, I interviewed him. And a nice guy, a guy I really respect.
So put him in context for those of us who may not know
him. He's one of the top. At one point, he was the king of evangelical worship music. And he was married to Sandra McCracken. So these are, they're basically Christian royalty.
Okay.
Their divorce changed his trajectory.
Okay, now
and
I remember this
both of their trajectories, as divorce does, right? I mean, it's a hard thing, as anyone has gone through it knows. And he has gone on a progressive trajectory in his career, and which involved changing his views, I think, on LGBTQ issues and some other things. And I follow him on Twitter, and I didn't know about this Dove Awards, except he said, I've won Dove Awards, but I usually don't go, but I'm going dressed, and he looks like June Cleaver, like in pearls. And so first of all, I want to give him credit for a 50s glam mom look. I mean,
that's conservative. You can't get more conservative than June Cleaver, right?
Exactly. I mean, so I want to say, whatever your thoughts are on cross-dressing, as a cross-dresser for his first time, maybe it's not his first time. But, I mean, I thought it was fantastic. But then it got me into the story because I don't follow this scene. Yeah.
So why did he go to the Dove Awards dressed up as June Cleaver?
Because there are people like Fanny Grant and some other people that are not – that have top songs on the contemporary Christian music chart. So the CCM, if you don't listen to it, top 40. I don't listen to country, but that means, you know, but if you get on the top of the charts,
there's the same kind of, but which is kind of, it's interesting that still exists given the way we all listen to music, but all right. So, and we probably have to tell people who I've read an article about, her name is Fanny Grant?
Fanny Grant.
So I have actually read an article about her. But you, maybe not all of our listeners have read this article. So who's Fanny Grant, Scott?
Well, she was matched with me on Tinder, but I mean, that's a difference. She was Fanny Grant 323, or actually it would be 610 would be more appropriate. But she is a trans Christian singer who has got some top songs in the worship.
Right. Grew up in a Christian community home. She went to a Christian college, right? I think she.
Yeah.
Yeah, she was part of some. Yeah, she's not trying to make fun of something that she wasn't a part
she's
of.
She's not colonizing anything.
No,
this
no,
is
she,
her.
This is her tribe.
Yeah, and she would like to be leading worship. I would imagine she would if you were an evangelical megachurch and you could afford her, which.
I don't. Yeah, I think she, now if I remember, I mean, she's kind of not going to church right now, kind of. That's her story is an interesting one. Yeah, and she came out of the whole, you know, the kind of things that the kind of people the Grammy or get the Dove Awards. The whole millions of people who listen to it, the Christian stations that are all over the country and worship teams all over America copying this music. She came out of that environment. Yeah.
Yeah. And so she was banned, I think, from attending as a kind of Christian celebrity. A lot of Christians like her music. And so people in solidarity, or she was not banned. She was not invited. So she could go into. She was uninvited, which I imagine just these people are like, I don't know anything. It reminds me of the that scene in Walk the Line when they said, Johnny, no one wants to watch you just go cheer up murderers and rapists and burglars. I mean, your fans are church folk, Christians. They don't want to see you go to Folsom Prison. And he says, well, then I guess they're not Christians. So, I mean, on some level, she's one of the tribe, just wants to go or be invited or
she felt like because of the level of her success, she merited an invite, but did not get the invite. And so, again, remind me the name of the person who went as June Cleaver.
By the way, this is we are no 60 minutes, but we call ourselves 48 minutes because the 12 minutes will save you. Will be more entertaining. No, it's Derek Webb.
Derek Webb. Okay, so
who's a great, a musician's musician,
talented, a very gifted musician. So did Derek go? Do we know if Derek's motivation for going was as a protest because of?
Yeah, he says that on Twitter.
Okay.
Yeah,
he was doing a protest. So part of what motivated you to do this is that we don't quite know how we feel about this. Is that part of? We don't have an opinion about this. And so we're trying to figure out how we should have an opinion or should we have an opinion. So that's kind of why we're talking about it, right?
Yes. I mean, I don't know what I think. So I will say this. I think the activist in me and the inclusion person in me says, screw the people that wouldn't have Fanny Crosby,
they don't play her music anymore.
Exactly.
Was a Christian. Would she be invited? She was a real Christian. Would she be invited to double?
Not with
not?
Those. Well, maybe with the glasses, the dark glasses.
If we could get her in skinny jeans, then Fanny Crosby might be invited.
Could be invited, black skinny jeans, but
black skinny jeans, right? And the Jesus belt buckle. The iconology of the church of the soundstage.
So moving on.
Yes, I'm trying to help.
So when I see this news story go on, I think my instinct is to say inclusion. You know, this, you know, look, I mean, this person is someone who people in the community like. She's I have a sympathy for the trans community and people that are marginalized. So I'm like, yeah. But then I think, I mean, if this was, if the best yeshiva student said, I'm trans, and they wouldn't award them or something, like, because of it, like, we wouldn't, I mean, maybe on a Saturday morning, the most anti-religion New York Times writer might get in the C-section. But in general, it wouldn't be... There are certain communities. I mean, we don't say in certain Middle Eastern communities, we don't say, look, this is the norm. It's not just you couldn't get private seating. I mean, Fannie Grant could get in the bleachers, like as Derek did. She just couldn't get the invite. Like, so it just makes me wonder about selective outrage and what should we be. To what degree does the community that has a certain view on sexual ethics, which I don't agree with, or gender identity, which I don't necessarily agree with either, but I wouldn't, I have a good friend who's an Orthodox rabbi who wants to come on the podcast after hearing a conservative rabbi on my show, on my interview podcast. My Orthodox rabbi friend and I have some serious differences on these issues too, but we're good friends. I don't look at him as some sort of bigoted excluder.
Right. Well, I guess, all right. So does the community, who gets to set the norms of a given community? And again, it's harder with something like evangelicalism, though, let's say Orthodox Judaism is not monolithic in any sense of the word, right? It's a very diverse movement. Does a community, well, that's, since we're talking about religious communities, let's just stick with that. Does a religious community get to set its own norms? And at what point, if those norms are considered harmful or offensive or discriminatory or whatever, is there an obligation to assert oneself into that community's discussion?
So when you're saying who gets to insert themselves. So, is the question, does size matter?
Well, no. But I think what the
no, but I mean that seriously in the sense of I think
the larger the group, right?
So with my bad jokes, it's a serious point. I think Orthodox Judaism is not an imperial presence in America,
right?
I mean,
or
I just
say the Amish. So should we show up to an Amish meeting, in dressed in some kind of something that's offensive? So
yeah,
you come in with. A guy comes in with cutoffs and a woman comes in with a miniskirt saying, we want to be here in your midst. Now, some Amish communities, but because you're outsiders, would say, well, sure, you're welcome. We will welcome you as an outsider, as a stranger, right? But you're not, but what if you said, well, I need you, we want you to start, I wanted to join your group and I want to stay this way. Well, that's a different issue, right? So you're right, because that's a minority. We wouldn't. We're kind of more, or should be more open, I guess, to granting minorities some protection. But what about, you're in the fine state of California, and the governor just vetoed a caste law, right? There was a law that was to be passed about how making caste illegal in California, and it was vetoed. And so there's a sense where there was an attempt to tell Hindus, if you would, I guess Hindus would be the chief target of that, that they're not allowed to practice that, do that social practice, which, it, you know, technically it's illegal in India, but it's still very much practiced. So that would be an assertion of the government saying, nope, this is not an acceptable practice, even though it's something that you value and it's connected to your religious and your social identity. But that's out of bounds. Now, I don't know all the details about it. I just saw that I knew that it was up, and I knew it got passed, and I knew it got vetoed. But isn't that kind of what we're talking about here a little bit? What point do you get to say, I need to interject myself into your norms because what you're standing for is wrong?
Yes. Yeah. And I would say where we have to weigh in on this particular thing is sort of like the old joke, how do an elephant and an alligator have sex? Very carefully.
Very carefully, right.
These are careful. I mean, I think these are things which I don't... easier on the mark. It's easier on questions, like you've alluded to, right? Like the Orthodox Judaism question is easier because it doesn't press in on us. Most of us. Some people, if you were in New York on school funding, I mean, the New York Times did an article a year, 16 months ago or so, about some of the funding and decisions on Hasidic schools. And this is where it might press on you. But for most of us, we don't quite feel the pressure in a way that, as you said, evangelical music is a multi-billion dollar industry. I mean, Jim Jordan, who could be the next Speaker of the House, couldn't arise to the highest constitutional office in the land, arguably. I mean, in the Constitution, the Speaker is mentioned first before the President.
Right.
That would not be possible without evangelicals.
And I guess the other question we should mention in this is not being happening in a theoretical background. At the same time that this is going on at the Dove Awards, you have, for whatever reason, and I mean, there's been things written on why this is happening now, but the transgendered issue is now become a hot button issue. And I mean, how many states, I forget how many states now have passed laws of rescinding certain kind of rights or trying to regulate that about particularly what minors can and cannot do. So this is happening in the backdrop of, again, it depends where you're at on this issue, but for people in the transgender community, what feels like a massive backlash, and the fair state of Tennessee is one of the states where this is happening, where there's been anti-drag laws passed in terms of clubs.
And also my friend, David French, I mean, I can say friend, even though you don't like when I say it, but he's been on my podcast, I think, three times, French, and David French is a guy. He's been on Bill Maher, Meet the Press.
No, yeah, he writes for the New York Times. Yeah,
yeah, he's a Tennessee guy, and he, I mean, there's not a more conservative than David French. When he volunteered to go to Iraq, came back, became the pro-life president at Harvard, and he, when he was at Harvard Law, he has defended Transgender Story Hour because his fear is, as an evangelical, what happens when Evangelical Story Hour becomes banned? So he...
Right.
So this is a messy thing, right? It I mean, it's well, not
and
easy.
Yeah. And again, the other end of it, so it has become a flash...
By the way, Bill, what would our Story Hour be called? Or I don't imagine we're getting any Story Hours. I mean,
right.
I mean, you have done Vacation Bible School.
Oh, yeah. No, I just did one this summer. Yeah.
Yeah. So, driving around in billboard with a minivan. That makes me think Vermont should have stricter laws, you know, just in general. I can't imagine Bill.
First of all, I don't have a minivan, but I do have a Subaru, so that allows me.
That's even worse. It's even worse.
I did not drive any kids around. Now, it's gotten more complicated. And I didn't drive any kids around. I just, other than my grandchildren who came and loved it. So, no, but I think the other thing is that, you know, we know that this particular community, but that's without, you know, without causes or without the whys behind it, the complex, it's a complex thing. But, you know, transgendered kids and young adults have a horrific rate of suicide, drug abuse. Many of them are rejected by their family. You know, it's interesting. I married into a family that watches Drag Race. And I usually am not one, but I sat down with my wife and stepkids and watched this. And my first reaction was like, this is horrific. The emotionally vulnerable, you know, people getting voted off, getting criticized. And it still doesn't make my top 10 shows at all. But I remember just kind of walking through.
By the way, can I just say for the listeners and your family, Bill hates most of my TV choices, too.
Yeah, right.
So that's fair.
Yeah,
so it's not easy.
It's not easy. No, it's not easy. But the stories of what these folks have gone through, some identify as her, some as deaf. It doesn't, yeah, what their pronouns are fluid as well, but that the rejection of their family, the suicide, depression, the abuse, death, for all the stuff that happens to this community, that's part of the story here, right? Also I would say that there's a tendency for knee-jerk reactions. So for instance, should someone under 18 be going through, you know, let's say a kid 12 through 18, which is such a confusing time anyway, should anything permanently be done to them physiologically that needs to be reversed later? I think there has to be some, and I know some stories, real life stories where people could have begun working on gender transition and waited, and it didn't really change who they were. They were glad that they got to make adult decisions about these things. So it's such a complicated psychological issue where there are real humans involved with this. And that's why, in terms of, I'm with you on this. Well, one level, why go to the Dove Awards in the first place? Number two, why?
We would, though. If there was somebody in Tennessee, we would do it. I mean, if you paid for us to podcast, but, we would do it.
Well, if you paid for my ticket to Tennessee, I would love to go to Nashville.
Whether I made it
to the Dove Awards, or,
we would do. And what would you wear? Do you think?
What would I wear to the Dove Awards?
Yeah, blazer. Would you go full tux?
Oh yeah, right. Being a tux. Yeah, I'm not. No, I would. I would probably wear my skinny black jeans and my Jesus belt buckle, and with my $700 haircut. A T-shirt that says,
"You're not being honest."
I'm not.
I've seen you at things. I think you would wear a blazer.
I'd wear a blazer and jeans.
A t-shirt.
Oxford shirt.
Oh, you would go full Oxford.
I'd go full Oxford. Yeah. So there's what I'd wear to the Into the Dove Awards, and then immediately leave and go listen to some music. So in Nashville. But I do think it's we are in this kind of, the culture wars and whatever the right wing of the Republican Party or the left wing of whatever party we want to talk about over there. We have to, people will take their stands and they'll make,
But you just said right wing of the Republican Party, but you repeat yourself.
Right. Okay. So, there, I would say, what would you call the new? So what's the difference between, the Freedom Caucus and David French? Give me some terminology. A classic conservative versus.
I have to think about our listeners here. Do you want my honest opinion?
Yeah, that's why I asked you.
Rationality. But.
But also a
commitment to classical liberalism, right? Which is fine if you're not committed to it, but. Because I don't think Stanley Hauerwas, who we both respect, is committed to classical liberalism, right? But I think a lot of us, you included, are committed to a way of an experiment for the past few hundred years.
Right.
Post-Reformation, post-30 Years War, that the Enlightenment sort of said, hey, it's better to have a procedural form of politics rather than killing each other over tribalism. Now, not that the tribalism doesn't seep in, and not that this, it was great. Jed Bartlett, the Martin Sheen character in The West Wing, says, when asked by an atheist Republican, what about separation of church and state? And Martin Sheen's character says, it's hanging in there, but there's nothing in the Constitution about the separation of church and politics.
Which
is true, right? I mean,
it's true.
We have safeguards against certain sorts of bigotry, but in general, we are in a procedural democracy and that sort of thing. Which I like. I mean, I think.
Well, maybe the fact is, yeah. Like, so, Jim Jordan? It's easy to call him all kinds of names because he's earned them. But if you had to come up with, is he a libertarian Republican? Is he is he a cult of personality? Because he was this way before he decided to follow Trump.
Yeah, this is the problem, I think. And it's fine if if the Republicans appoint him, whatever. But I think he was a flamethrower, a sort of, what you call him, and I'm not,
Boehner called him a legislative terrorist.
Well, I was going to quote John Boehner and say that, but, and I don't quote John Boehner very often, so this is, Bill, wait, is Christ coming on the clouds? And we're both quoting John Boehner. But he was.
He did not go to Congress to legislate.
Yeah.
He did not go to Congress to govern. He's running for arguably the most important position in our government when it comes to governing, legislating.
Constitutionally, course. Yeah. Nothing can get done without the speaker.
That's kind of close to a definition of an anarchist. It's kind of an anarchy kind of thing.
If he was an anarchist, don't you think he'd dress better?
Well, I don't know. I don't know any. He's the only anarchist I know from Ohio.
You know what's weird too, and I'm not against any of it, but I don't like wrestling.
Anarchy.
I don't like wrestlers and wrestling.
That's why he's got to spend some time with the Neanderthals to learn what's important.
I'm not like Bill. I'm not saying people shouldn't do it.
Right.
And I think there might be historical evidence that Socrates at least had done some of it. But it was Athens. I'm just saying I don't like a wrestler. What do you like in a legislator or a president or a governor? Do you like a sports? Like, do you like a baseball player, a football player, basketball?
I'm fine with any of those. I mean, I'm a little concerned how many hits they took to the head. That's concerning. I mean, I'm concerned about my own kids who play these sports, and God help all those people out there who have these long-term issues with it. But tying this together, getting away from our the representative from Ohio. One of the complexities, you know, is again, is there a way to talk about these things in rational and we're dealing with Christian issues, because the Dove folks are, you know, Christian musicians. Then what are, I guess, when we as Christians disagree about certain boundaries and certain norms, right? And we feel like some of these boundaries and norms actually harm people. But those who hold these norms saying to give up on these norms, actually, there's a greater harm that can happen to society and the nature of the Christian life. Is there any way to navigate these things? Because I think it's easier on a community level, a local community level, because there's a sense where in a local church, you can have a family ethic. You can say, okay, as we tolerate a lot in our families, right? But because the family bond is the most important. So I would argue that the most important bond among Christians is that we're Christians, and regardless of our positions on other things, that is the bond.
Yeah.
That by nature, whatever you think, whether I disagree with you, whether you hold the most onious positions when it comes to politics or whatever, but you are, you know, you're my brother or my sister or whatever you want to label yourself. If you're in Christ, then that's all that really matters. And so I think in terms of inclusion, that inclusion is done in the baptismal act. That's a sacramental inclusion. That's not ours to decide one way or the other. If a person is in Christ, they're in Christ. So now the thing about it is, if we feel like a Christian is in error or in sin or whatever, then as a family member, we have an obligation to try to restore them. But from a strategic perspective, saying from a family perspective, when you have a family member acting out or who, for whatever reason, has kind of cut themselves off from the family or doing things that you as a family are not part of your family norms, you still, and I'm talking, I have a big family, but it's a very diverse big family. So you still go out of your way to do whatever you can to say the family is more important. The family is bigger than what any individual person is doing.
Yeah, so I think first off, take a big dose of original sin. I mean, just say, hey, like, there's no original sin free zones, even our own heads, especially our own heads and our own hearts. So whenever we engage these things that are volatile or provocative, especially when we engage the volatile and the provocative, probably some of our most base tendencies, maybe our better angels, but oftentimes some of our demons are always present. I think what I would have loved to see, and again, we can't, these are fantasies because none of us are there. I'd love to see a picture with Derek, who I like a lot. And I don't know the people that run the Dove Awards, but one of the people taking a selfie together. And, you know, I imagine them both posting it with different captions, like with Derek saying, hey, something, you know, like, hey, look at who got to be taking picture. Hey, I'm working on him, folks, and I love him, but I'm working on him. And I imagine the Dove person said, I don't like this guy's taste in fashion or politics, but I sure do love his music and his soul. And that's the selfie with two different captions and both saying they're true. Like both people thinking about a caption, the way you could capture with a caption a picture in your life. So if you imagine these terrible disagreements or an important disagreements in an Instagram post or something like that, hey, could the person on the other side of this conversation see themselves in the caption? They don't have to agree with it, but would it be totally untrue? And so if we could have sympathetic but true and charitable exchanges in self-portraits, that would or selfies, that would be by the way, let me remind folks in the archives, one of our worst podcasts early in the, it's not in the can, we did a podcast on selfies once.
Right, I remember that. Well,
like, you know, when we had no idea what we were doing. I mean, do you remember that was terrible. Gosh. I mean, we were just like, "You." I don't know if it was your or my idea. I think it was yours. Like, what about selfies? And then we started taking selfies of each other. I mean, it was terrible.
I think what you just said there deserves a final word. But what you were saying, something reminded me of a different, same spirit, but a different way of looking at it. Paul spends a lot of time in the book of Corinthians trying to deal with the weaker brother issue, right? Weaker, mm-hmm. stronger brother. All right. What if each person in that selfie saw the other as the weaker brother or weaker sister or weaker.
And by this, for our listeners who don't know the New Testament, they're talking about
the issue.
The weaker brother is the person that needs every Torah observance observed, or else if they see somebody or maybe this guy was spotted at a gay bathhouse or whatever. These are things that happen in ancient Rome.
But the idea of
food laws and things.
Dietary laws.
And the stronger brother is the person that says, hey, I can accept all things. You know, I don't necessarily condone all things, but I can fellowship with all people.
But I actually think Paul is actually messing with the Corinthians. Because I think he really sees the people who see themselves as the stronger are really the weaker ones.
Yeah.
And I think that's an interesting thing to think about, because what if you're in a minority position on a social issue in Christianity, and if you're, you know, in evangelical land and have different positions, you are, I think a lot of the nuns, for instance, a lot of people, the ex-jellicals, are people who just did not see alternative Christian options that are infinitely out there, right? The Christianity they're rejecting is the kind of Christianity, you know, Rowan Williams said when he read Dawkins' book, I don't believe in that God either, whatever God he's presenting. And I think there's a little bit about that. The evangelicals are rejecting a Christianity that I think a lot of evangelicalism is heretical on some really important issues. And so when people reject that, they have a possibility to get closer to the Catholic faith, small c. But I think there's a sense where if we're all the weaker and the stronger, you know. I think probably often when we think we're the most right, at least I know in my own life, I've become more suspicious of myself in those times, because I might actually be the weaker one in this. And I think that is similar to your idea of for Paul, what was more important than whether you can or cannot. Or whether you should or should not keep kosher now that you're a follower of Messiah Jesus, what was more important was maintaining the fellowship bond, maintaining the communion of the church. And I don't think anyone cares about that nowadays, which is why we're heretical.
And aren't we all, like, we're all children of Jacob, right? And so isn't Jacob the limping brother, the one in the tradition that sees God?
Yeah.
To walk away from seeing God is the limper, and I don't trust anybody that doesn't limp a little bit.
So we've probably added no value to this topic other than it helps.
But
me.
Bill, do we ever really? I mean, is that a metric for us?
Well, come let us reason together.
Yeah,
right?
I mean,
come let us reason together, and I think the Logos can be there, right? But peace, everyone. We certainly are praying for peace. All right.
Amen.
How about that episode of New Persuasive Words? Thanks so much for joining Scott and Bill. We hope you enjoyed the conversation and will join us next time. Till then, thanks for listening, and God bless.